Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And folks, welcome back. We are getting into Madison's notes on nullification. So to kind of get you to where we have gone and where we're going, after we went through the Constitution, we kind of proved how the government started going down this path of, you know, kicking the tires, doing things. And there were points in time where the government kind of steered that car in the wrong direction. And so that was the Assumption Act. And even though the federal government does have this enumerated power that they have the good faith and credit, they cannot treat states differently. They also have this uniformity requirement. So the Assumption Act actually violated the uniformity by giving one or a couple of states a huge advantage by relieving them of their debt for the war, which they were obligated to pay for. And then that spread load, all of that, over to the other states that were good states that paid their debt. How would you like that, folks? It's almost like the student loan debt crap that they're doing. Those people who actually paid, now they're being unfairly given a disadvantage because the people that aren't paying are violating the Constitution. When it comes down to the uniformity clause, that is based on taxation. Go look at this. And so when we look at the burden and the load, it is unconstitutional for them to actually say, we've loaned money to certain segments of our society because we have the ability to tax you. Now we're actually going to tax you to pay for that. That right there is a violation of the uniformity clause in taxation. Taxation must be fairly done, it must be distributive, and it must be equal upon all. We shouldn't have to pay the burden and debt for anybody that legally obligated themselves financially to the government for a student loan. It violates the spirit of the Constitution, it violates the spirit of contract law, and it violates the spirit of the uniformity clause, because that uniformity clause applies regardless of whether it's states or people, because you got to remember the 16th Amendment didn't exist. So the spirit of that law when it comes to taxation, because that was the whole point of the uniformity clause, to ensure the taxation was uniform, to ensure that it was going to be applied, well, to actually create disadvantages. Because again, there were people that actually paid off their debt out of that pool of student loans and those who didn't. That creates a huge disadvantage, plus those people who never had the student loan. They can't do that. This is the danger of the, you know, not understanding the Constitution. We have to start articulating very clearly what is constitutional, what isn't. This really isn't rocket science. All you have to do is go back and listen to, and the podcasts are up on the Red State Talk Radio podcast page on our Reclaiming the Republic domain. Go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, go to the Red State Talk Radio podcast page. The menu, site menu is right there on the right. Just go down a few, you know, buttons, 6, 8, whatever, and click on that. And you'll see, starting around September 19th, where we start talking and covering the Constitution. So please, 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 please go listen to that and go listen, because we actually talk about where we are, section, Article 1, Article 2. Go drill into Article 1, Section 8. I don't know if I got into the section. So you'll have to listen to Article 1 and then Article 2. And in Article 1, it's clear. Then when we get into the amendments, go to the 16th Amendment. And listen to how they're violating the 16th Amendment, because the 16th Amendment did not remove the uniformity clause, the uniformity requirement. They still have to be uniform in what they do. It only allows them to directly tax income, but they have to do it uniformly. Now that they've basically bypassed the states as the standards of apportionment, now they're going directly to the people. They still have to apply the uniformity clause. They didn't strike that. The idiots that wrote that didn't know what they were doing, because if they really did, they would have done things that could have really hurt us. Most people think that the 16th Amendment is this terrible thing. Actually, it's not. It doesn't give them any more spending power, any more purchasing power, nothing. It just says that we no longer, you know, have to tax by apportionment to states to basically spread load the cost across all of the states based on population. California would pay the most. No, now it goes to the individuals, and still California pays the most, but it still has to be uniform. What they did, and the reason they went down this path of taxing income, is because at that point in time, they couldn't tax corporations. They had no ability to touch a corporation. There's nothing in the Constitution that gives them any jurisdiction over corporations. It wasn't until the Supreme Court ruled that a corporation was a person. Oh, now that they're a person, we can tax their income. Now that they're a person, we can actually regulate them. And actually, they don't even have those authorities to do this. So this is why understanding the Constitution is that important. Okay? And so when we really look at government, when we look at what they're doing and the direction they're going, even in this past election, I just had this conversation with the good folks at Timber Nation. By the way, they are up and running. They're taking orders. Please, I mean, I think that they've got a pretty clear slate. If you're looking for some hardwood quality furnishing, hardwood, go to timbernation.com. They've done a complete facelift and everything else. And so take advantage of this. You might actually be able to get your order, your entertainment system, your shelves, whatever it is you're looking to do before Christmas. You might actually be able to do that. But I mean, all this stuff is handmade. All this stuff is shipped directly to you. So folks, take advantage, because Timber Nation, go price this stuff. Solid walnut, solid hickory, solid oak, cherry, maple. Folks, where can you go to get that type of quality from Macy's? You're going to be paying more money for the garbage that's coming from China. Stop doing that. Anyway, I had a meeting. What I was going to tell you, because when we look at government and we actually see what they're doing, there is no sign, folks, whatsoever that they're going to let up at what they're doing. And this is why it is now or never. You know, we're in a speeding car and it's heading for that cliff, and there's no brakes, and that gas pedal is stuck. It is inevitable. If we don't change the course of the car, or we don't bail out now and let that car go across, but we don't want this nation to go across that precipice. We don't want to go off that cliff. So that's why we don't want you to check out. We don't want you to absolve yourself from the United States and become a sovereign citizen. That is the last thing you should do. Because I'm telling you, when all of a sudden they take over and you're not a U.S. citizen, you have no rights. When you cross that line, you no longer have rights. And I want you to understand this. There are people that have done that have gone away and they've never come back. They're now being held because they're no longer citizens. We have a few people in the Pacific Northwest area, Idaho and Washington, that have gone away. So why would you want to put yourself at risk? As a matter of fact, the Constitution protects U.S. citizens from all this unconstitutional government, all the things that they're doing, corporations, the Fed, everything that they're doing, that is all unconstitutional. So why would you not want to have that protection and start demanding these protections and demanding compliance to that Constitution? It baffles me why anybody would buy into this. Oh, yeah, that seems like this is really sexy, right? Because now you're above the law and they can't touch you. At least it seems that way, because they don't know what to do. I'm telling you, as soon as you pull that card, you've been flagged. As soon as they know who you are, you're flagged, and they will round you up when it comes time to go get those fat pigs, because that's all they see. It's harvest time, and it's time to go get the fat pigs first. And then that way they can just either deport you, put you in a gulag, whatever they plan on doing. We need everybody. Because bottom line, if you're a sovereign citizen, you can't sign petitions. You're no longer a U.S. citizen to sign a petition. You cannot, claim and assert your rights. Not even in a court of law do you have rights anymore. Why would you do this? Why would anybody do this, especially just on the fundamental basics that this Constitution was inspired by the divine hand of providence, that this Constitution is as pure as can be? The only thing that they're dealing with is all of the the corruption and things that they had no authority, all of these laws, all of these appendages they created, the corporations, they had no authority to do these things. If they did prove to me where they had the enumerated power, where they had that delegate granted to them of being able to do these things, then I would say, okay, it's over, we're done. But folks, that evidence doesn't exist. That's why we put the debates on the 14th Amendment right up on our website. Go look at the Congressional Globe, and that's 263 pages, folks. And when you really look at it, it's more like 900 pages. It's more like 900 pages of debates on the 14th Amendment. Go through it, and I'm here to tell you, you will not find one part of that debate at all that asserts that the federal government has these authorities based on the language in this particular section, this section, or what have you. I am telling you that the people that are convincing you, they're using paperwork and so forth, that is all based on fraud. And so all they're doing is perpetrating that fraud and getting you to actually do something harmful to yourself. Whether they're making money at it or not, it doesn't matter. They're basically doing the devil's errand, and they're becoming a devil's advocate. So one of the things we're going to do when we come back, before I get into Madison's notes on the on nullification, is we'll kind of summarize kind of where we are, and then I want to cover the county commissioner's meeting, because that was a week ago, and I think this is really important. We do have it up on our website. It is on the take. Well, it's still loading, so we basically started this yesterday, and it's still kind of loaded because it's 6 gigs. Anyway, we'll be back after these messages.
Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so where have we been and where are we going? We've covered the Constitution. We've covered this history of them kicking the tires where they've kind of violated. And I went down this rat hole on the uniformity clause, taxation, and so forth. They actually did the right thing with the Whiskey Rebellion. They did some really good things. The cod fishery bounties, they kind of constrained themselves. Then all of a sudden, the Alien and Sedition Acts came out. And this is where Madison and Jefferson basically created, constitutionally created, the necessary information and education regarding this thing they called the compact, this thing called the Constitution, a power of attorney in the form of a compact, so that we clearly understand who has the final say over whether that compact is violated or not. And it's not the Supreme Court, because the Supreme Court doesn't have any jurisdiction over things not delegated. When it comes to things that aren't delegated, the only tribunal, and this is why we went through these things called the Virginia and Kentucky resolutions, and then Madison's report on this, and as well as Jefferson's final draft, or I should say not final draft, forgive me, I said that. Jefferson and the Kentucky 1799 resolutions, after the states came back and said, well, we're not going to participate in this. We're not going to give you the quorum you need to force the federal government into compliance. And so this is where Madison basically went back and provided a complete detailed report. This is the education necessary. And so further along, as things went along, people started going, hey, you know, these things, these resolutions, they basically spell out this thing of nullification, and the Carolinas and so forth actually started perpetrating this perversion of what these men did in 1798. These men being James Madison and Thomas Jefferson. And so Madison had to stand up, and he had been standing up, and he finally created this formal document on notes on nullification. This is why we've kind of gone through why and what they need to do, right? And so we're in the middle of that document, and we'll get back to that document after I take a little bit of a trip down this rat hole called meeting with your county commissioners. Now, here's the interesting thing. I live in a blue state, and actually there are several counties. Well, I shouldn't say several, but there's a good number of counties that have really strong constitutionally conservative county commissioners. And so I went to a group of county commissioners that I knew were really strong, that, you know, were not a part of the Republican agenda or the deep state or anything like that. These guys are just trying to do their jobs, but they just don't understand the Constitution. So what do we do? What do we do when people don't understand and they're in that position? Well, folks, we have to educate them. A part of the First Amendment right of petition is the right of instruction as well, because you got to understand that when they're doing something that they don't understand is wrong. You have to educate them as to what they have to do, and then 9 times out of 10, they're going to fix it. These guys just don't know how to fix it as a county commissioner. What do they do? How do they get involved? And so that's the whole point of this series of presentations. Now, we've got the video up, and I'll probably have to redo that presentation. So I'm going to probably try to find another county commissioner group to go to, and we'll probably do it so that it's just me. We'll kind of show, you know, the overview of where I'm going to be sitting in the room, because, you know, when you're sitting around a table, or actually when I'm presenting to a kind of a board, you'll see in the video, there's one gentleman that's to the left of me, and then the other two are kind of off to the right in front of me, and there's just no way to have a good, other than just a frontal view of me. And if you've ever seen me, folks, you know I have a face for radio. I shouldn't be on video, because it's just not that good, not handsome. So that being said, and, you know, I know that sounds self-effacing, but when I look at the mirror, I just go, I am so happy that I have a wife who loves me, that she was able to get past, you know, my shortcomings in looks. And so, you know, I'm just thankful that the Lord has blessed me with true love in my life. And I hope I hope everybody has that. I know that it's, you know, more of a crapshoot in life today, because nobody has the book of, okay, this is the perfect woman for you, right? And actually there's work in making that there, because, you know, it wasn't Green Acres right after the wedding. Everybody has these problems. You have to overcome those, but you have to truly love each other enough to be willing to do all of that. But I'm climbing out of this rat hole, and so this way I can kind of go into what I actually said. So this first meeting was really focused on one very specific message. I wanted to teach these men that, one, we had, you know, what a constitution is, and the fact that our constitutions are enumerated just like a power of attorney in the form of a compact, that this power of attorney specifies what roles, responsibilities, and powers that have been delegated, and property that has been delegated to the federal government. And so as we go down this path of going through these enumerated roles, responsibilities, powers, and property, we can clearly see what the federal government can't do. So I talked about some of the things that they're doing that was actually, you know, spoken up on by three presidents like the Department of Transportation. So I've made this initial presentation to these men to understand that we have a real constitutional crisis. We have a real problem. And the question I constantly ask is, why is it that there's not one office, not one bastion of government that loves the Constitution, that is actually dedicated themselves to doing what they're supposed to be doing? And so the intent is to try to get this initiated by helping these men understand what they have to do, because bottom line, they can't commit. They cannot commit to doing something that they don't know what it is to do. So the next presentation I'm going to give them specifically is the process. We're going to go through the Alien Sedition Act just like we went through, just like we have gone through in these past few days. And so once they understand that the county itself possesses the same authority that states do over the federal constitution, the counties have the same authority over the state constitution. They are the parties to that compact. Even though we, the people, are a part of that compact in both of the compacts of the federal and the state, bottom line, it is the counties that are supposed to have the authority to step in, and they do have that because they are the parties. They were the ones that created it. The people didn't. And anybody that thinks otherwise, just give me a call, 425-270-5416. We'll get into the details of that conversation. If you're willing to go on air and you really don't think that the counties actually have that authority, then let's talk about it, because Madison breaks this down, as we've proven, as going through the resolutions, this falls under the tenets of contract law. When you look at who the parties were that created the Constitution, you can't annihilate or get rid of it, especially if that party is perpetual. Are counties perpetual? Yes, they are. Is a single person, are the people that erected and created that state and constitution that you claim that they are the ones that did it, are they perpetual? No, they died. So how do we hold them accountable? How do we know that things are fast and set in stone because they're not there to defend it? Ah, see, that was the brilliance of the divine hand of providence, making sure that the entities that have the ultimate authority, the sovereignty over those compacts are perpetual entities, so that it doesn't go into an estate and get handed down to somebody else or actually become probate that the state can take over. Oh, because these people had these rights as the sovereigns of that constitution. They all died off. Well, the state has assumed all that because it didn't go down the heir. It wasn't transferred down to the heir because they didn't have it in their will, right? Or some stupid legal argument. And that's how they've usurped this. No, the bottom line is it was not created via democracy and by the people. It was created by representative government from the counties. They sent representatives to basically debate, create the Constitution, and then it was sent out to the counties for ratification. That simple, folks. It was literally that simple. That's why this is not rocket science. It isn't. So when we start looking at enforcing these laws, one of the things that we want to do at the county level, and this is one of my focuses, is to actually start going after corporations in the state who are violating the laws themselves, as well as the state government. We want to actually go after the HOAs, these private entities that are claiming you have no rights. You know, folks, this has to be a paramount thing, and I know Sue Venable basically has committed to me saying that she was going to do these petitions for the right to have a chicken coop. The right, if you have adequate property, you know, whatever that adequate property is for health, for whatever health reasons, because the state does have a responsibility to make sure that, you know, one neighbor doesn't, you know, affect the health and well-being of another person. And those are very specific things that they have to determine. But having a chicken coop, even though, you know, there may be some rooster that caws in the morning or what have you, that is not something that actually is affecting your well-being just because you hear a rooster in the morning. Nah, sorry. And so chicken coops are legitimate, and chicken coops are something that we need to start restoring property rights back to the people. Because, folks, you know as well as I do, your government doesn't care if you can't get food at the grocery store. That means that you're dependent on them and you can't sustain yourself, and that's how they control you. But if you have chicken coops, if you have the ability to actually have a way to provide for yourself, you know, a couple pigs, what have you, that you're not doing this for commercial endeavors, you have a fundamental right. And so you have a fundamental right to provide for yourself, and they cannot pass laws nor enforce those laws to take away those rights. And that's exactly what these HOAs are doing. These HOAs are doing the dirty deeds of the progressives. They didn't even know that they were doing this a long time ago. They thought, well, because we never thought that there wouldn't be an abundance of food. Are you kidding me? The government has been working painstakingly to take away our greatest dependent and taking away our independence. Anyway, when we come back, we're going to get into Madison's notes on nullification. Thank you so much. We'll be right back after these two promos.
The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so as you know, the show is also sponsored by RepublicReview.org, and this is the only show that gives you the academic evidence and academic evidence-based solutions. So here we go. We're getting into Madison's notes on nullification. We kind of left off with him kind of going through these resolutions. And so now we're going to get into some real meat as to why single states can't nullify. And some more meat. This is a very meaty document. And so starting off with paragraph 26, and what is the comment of the report on that particular resolution, namely the third resolution? 27. This is paragraph 27. In the first place, it conforms to the resolution in using the term which expresses the interposing authority of the states in the plural number states, not in the singular number states. In other words, in the plural form, he's using number, but I'm going to change this language. In the plural form of the states, not in the singular form of state. It is indeed impossible to perceive that the entire current and complexion of the observations explaining and vindicating the resolutions imply necessarily that by the interposition of the states, again plural, for arresting the evil of usurpation was meant a concurring authority, not that of a single state, whilst the collective meaning of the term gives consistency and effect to the reasoning and the object. But besides this general evidence that the report in the invariable use of the plural term states withheld from a single state, the right expressed to or in the resolution a still more precise and decisive inference to the same effect is afforded by several passages in the document. Thus the report observes, quote, "The states being the parties to the constitutional compact and in their highest sovereign capacity, it follows the necessity that there can be no tribunal above their authority to decide in the last resort whether the compact made by them be violated, and consequently that the parties to it must themselves decide in the last resort such questions as may be sufficient magnitude to require their interposition." So here he goes basically citing the report of 1800 on the Virginia resolutions. Now he goes on in paragraph 30. "Now, apart from the palpable insufficiency of an interposition by a single state to affect the declared object of the interposition, namely to maintain authorities and rights, must be the same in all states, it is not true that there be no tribunal above the authority of a state as a single party." See, in other words, a single party doesn't have the authority to say, hey, you've got to abide by this constitution. It requires a majority of the states. Republic review. That's what republic review does. That's why what we're going to do in following up to this is going through the republic review process. It's right out there on the website. But we want, we only go through this like once a year, because most people that listen to this, they kind of understand what republic review is. But it's imperative that we provide these details so that we have these records so that you can actually point people to these podcast pages. In the past, we've asked that you just write down that number, but we've gotten just a little bit of help. So that somebody is giving me a little synopsis, basically one bullet, and that should be sufficient for you to be able to pull, oh, there it is right there, nullification, boom, we've got it. Send them that because they believe in nullification. Then they can listen to this show. And more importantly, you can cut out the last, you know, the front half of this particular show if you don't want to have them listen to the HOA stuff, the compact and uniformity clause and all of that. So anyway, let me get back to what he says. "Now, apart from the palpable insufficiency of interposition by a single state to affect the declared object of the interposition, namely to maintain authorities and rights, must be the same in all the states. It is not true that there would be no tribunal above the authority of a state as a single party, the aggregate authority of the parties being a tribunal above it to decide the last resort." Because bottom line, it comes down to this, folks. If you've got one voter that demands that your politician does something, that has no force. I mean, what is to motivate the politician to do what they're supposed to do? This is why we actually have to create a collective conscience, and we have to create a collective force in demanding compliance. Folks, it is literally that simple. We have to demand compliance of the compact. So the few things you have to do is you have to become smart enough to understand what is compliant and what isn't compliant. And again, this isn't rocket science. If it's enumerated, they have to do it. If it's not enumerated, they cannot do it. They can't meddle with it. Paragraph 31. Again, the language of the report is, quote, "If the deliberate exercise of dangerous powers palpably withheld by the Constitution could not justify the parties to it in interposing even so far as to arrest the progress of evil and thereby preserve the Constitution itself, as well as to provide the safety to the parties to it, there would be an end to all relief from usurped power. Apply here the interposing power to a single state, and it would not be true that there would be no relief from the usurped power. A sure adequate relief would exist in the interposition of the states as the co-parties to the Constitution with the power paramount to the Constitution itself. And so what he's really saying here, and again, you know, it just makes sense that there is force. You know, what's that old saying? Safety in numbers. There is force when you have a majority of the states saying you must do this. So we're at a point. We're at a point where we're losing these fundamental principles. But I'm telling you, as people start getting educated, this is going to be a jaw-dropping education for these Bolsheviks that are in Hawaii and in California and in New York and these other little states, because the majority of the states are red. The majority of the states, reasonable people, equally informed, seldom disagree. And I believe the majority of these red states are all reasonable. We'll be able to get the majority of these states all on board. Once we do, folks, once we do, these states will have incredible political power over any politician who refuses to support the Constitution. Imagine this. In your particular state, you have a majority of the people that you now have a majority of the state legislature. The state legislature can then remove anybody in that state legislature who refuses to support the Constitution, and they vote contrary. They vote their own conscience that we can violate the Constitution, that these powers are implied, and they basically deny the irrefutable argument that this is an enumerated Constitution. Anybody that basically, what we'll say, denies the truth, then the state legislature has the authority to remove them by using Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. And so when we start applying this down to the county, this is how we start this. We start applying this down at the county. We work our way up, because as we purge our ranks at the county and we purge our ranks at the state, guess who's next? The federal government. Once we get enough states to where we can have a consensus that these representatives must be returned because they're violating their oath. This means, if you understand this, this means that once Texas, who, if you look at Texas, Texas has a lot, but they're primarily red. They're a dark red state, but they're so big that they have a lot of Democrats in Congress. Every single one of those Democrats will have a choice. Either they're going to finally put aside their political ideology and their agenda and accept that they must be held accountable to that Constitution and will be held accountable to that Constitution. Therefore, they will vote all in kind with everybody else in supporting that Constitution. If they think they have the courage, if they think they've got the courage to vote otherwise, then the state, the Attorney General will basically charge them with treason and return them back, and they will actually be replaced by the state executive and or whatever the state's process is. And so all of these people will then be, based on the Constitution, I think the Constitution will go to the governor, but inside the states they have these processes that may go to the party or what have you. But bottom line, if he goes to the party and the party comes up with another one that he should, and he has the ultimate say, he doesn't have to go with what the party gives him. He can actually say, what we need is somebody that's actually going to do the job. And this is how we get rid of every Democrat in Congress. This is how they'll all go, either that or they'll become constitutional Democrats. In other words, they've turned their back on the agenda. They've turned their back on what these Bolsheviks, these communists are trying to do in violating our Constitution. If this is not making sense, folks, then you got to let me know, because this is about as plain and simple as I could possibly make it. But again, I know that some people don't speak GR, they don't understand some of the things I'm saying, so I'm going to have to pursue, and I'm going to ask people, would you please listen to this? Would you please tell me whether this made sense to you? And that way I can come back to you and go, okay, so there were some people that didn't get it, and that's okay. I'm happy to go around the woodshed as many times as necessary, not to beat anybody, but to help them see this building, this shack, as a woodshed. Because that's the whole point here, folks. We all need to come. we need to come to Jesus on this. That's probably the best way to say this. Excuse me, I just sneezed. But anyway, as you can tell, we're heading into a break. So when we come back from the break, we will actually do some more of the notes on nullifications, and we're going to kind of jump down into some other spots. So we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so moving forward, we're going to actually hit the next few paragraphs, then we'll jump down again. And so we'll try to, there's no way we'll be able to get this done today, but we'll try to wrap this up tomorrow. Because what he's saying here, folks, is exactly what I've been telling you. If you read Republic Review, you'll start understanding who has the authority. We the people must first assert our authority at our local government and demand that our representatives in this Republican form of government do not and stop compromising their requirement in demanding full compliance of the Constitution. We have to demand that they do this. If not, then we're going to be finding people. And I have to say this, because bottom line, once the people understand that this is coming, then I think that gives them time to make some corrections, gives them time to get their head right. Anybody that's reasonable, because I'm going to have a hard time understanding, because I do know that there are Republicans that are communists, because I've seen this in some of the red counties in Washington. I've been told, such as the representatives in Okanagan, the people that I know, that I trust, says that those people are communists that are Republicans. And so what we have to do is we have to start using these campaigns on the Constitution, demand full compliance so that when they come up for re-election, they're gone. This is a very powerful process, folks. And all we have to do, we could actually change America's culture as far as we're down this nasty path of perversion and debauchery and unconstitutional tyranny. As far as we're down this path, and most people say we can't get out of this, we can. We have all of the authority and power to do this. We have to demand compliance. That's the key right there. So diving back into what Madison says, paragraph 32, but, continues the report, it is objected that the judicial authority is to be regarded as the sole expositor. Remember, we went through this. That was paragraph, I think, 22 or so. As the sole expositor of the Constitution in the last resort. In answering this objection, the report observes that, quote, however true it may be that the Judicial Department is, in all questions submitted to it by the forms of the Constitution, to decide in the last resort, this resort must necessarily be the not be the last in relation to the rights of the parties to the Constitutional Compact, from which the judicial as well as the other departments hold their delegated trusts. So what he's basically saying is it's true that we have to give the Supreme Court the final say on things. And what he says in here, observes, however true, submitted to it by the forms of the Constitution. So in other words, the Judicial Department is in all questions submitted to it by the forms of the Constitution. In other words, those things that they have jurisdiction over, they are the final arbiter. Those few things. But you see, here's the problem, folks. Everything that they've ruled that they've had no jurisdiction on has created unconstitutional government, and they knew this. They were aggrandizing by saying, oh, yeah, we have jurisdiction. Bring it forth. They should never have heard any of these cases. They should never, and they basically should have said, hey, we don't have parties to it. This has to be resided and actually resolved at the state or states. The states need to form a tribunal and hold us accountable. How amazing would that be if the Supreme Court actually did what they were supposed to do and pointed to the state legislatures and say, you guys have to fix this. We can't do it. It's the same thing if Trump or the President of the United States went around and toured the United States in the next, you know, after the next election, because we know Biden is just a shill. He's a puppet for the globalists out there. So bottom line, here we're going down this path of constitutional compliance, and now the Supreme Court in Roe v. Wade actually said that the states are the ones that have to settle this. They had no jurisdiction over this case. But here's the little problem, that the Supreme Court has actually put blood back on their hands by saying, well, don't construe this as all these other things that we usurped that falls under the same category. We're just basically allowing the states this one thing that we didn't have jurisdiction over for you to resolve. All these other things that we had no jurisdiction over, we're gonna maintain this because we got to. We got to keep our control over you. So in other words, the Supreme Court is still the problem. They're still not doing what they're supposed to be doing. So anyway, as we go through this, let me see here. On the other hypothesis, the delegation of the judicial power would annul the authority delegating it and the concurrence of this department. He's talking about the Judicial Department with the others, the executive and the legislature, in usurped power might subvert forever and beyond the possible reach of any rightful remedy the very Constitution which all were instituted to preserve. So, you know, he's just basically restating what he said in his report, but he's consistent. And this is what he says. Here is direct proof. This is paragraph 33, folks. Here is direct proof that the authority of the Supreme Court of the United States was understood by the legislature of Virginia to have been, have been to an interposition of the states against of all the alien and sedition acts and laws. So in other words, that they had the authority to actually do the interposition. So when you read the language, it's kind of fragmented and broken. But bottom line, what he's saying right here is that they actually had the authority, not the Supreme Court. The state legislature possessed this authority. Now he goes on, and this is what he says to this little following line, that they had this authority. Who can avoid seeing the necessity of understanding by the, quote, parties, close quote, to the Constitutional Compact, the authority which made the compact and from which all departments held their delegated trust? These trusts were certainly not delegated by a single party, but regarding the term parties in its plural form, not individual meaning, the answer to the objection is clear and satisfactory. Take the term as a meaning a party and not the parties, and there is neither truth nor argument in the answer. but further on the hypothesis that the rights of the parties meant the rights of a party, it would not be true, as affirmed by the report, that, quote, the delegation of judicial power would annul the authority delegating it, that the concurrence of this department with others in usurped power, it might subvert forever and beyond the reach of any rightful remedy, the very Constitution which all were instituted to preserve. So let me finish this up. However deficient a remedial right in a single state might be to preserve the Constitution against usurped power, an ultimate and adequate remedy would always exist in the rights of the parties to the Constitution. So in other words, what he's saying, folks, is even though it might be a lost cause when a single state tries to do this, there's always, the right always exists. And I'll actually say what he says. An ultimate and adequate remedy would always exist in the rights of the parties to the Constitution, in whose hands the Constitution is at all times but clay in the hands of the potter. And who could not apply a remedy by explaining, amending, or remaking it as to the one or other modes of the most popular remedy? Now, so here's the thing, and this is where we've got these convention of state folks that are running around saying, ah, we believe that's what he's saying. No, he actually lists three very specific processes. Explaining, to me, this is enforcing. Amending is changing, and then three, remaking. So this is why when he goes through this process, he never mentions a constitutional convention. Never. What he mentions here is that there is always in the state's hands, because the Constitution is clay in their hands, and they can enforce that Constitution without having to reform it or make changes by explaining and enforcing interposition. Interposition is not making changes, it is enforcing. But he always says that if it gets to a point that, you know, we really need to actually rewrite the Constitution, then that's what we would do. And I'm telling you, folks, with what we have in the Constitution today, with the 14th Amendment and Section 3, if Madison was alive here, it is burning in my bosom to tell you, if Madison was alive here, he would say, we still now possess the power to pull this Constitution out of the grave, like Lazarus, and resurrect it and give it life. And so maybe we should call this whole project the Lazarus Project. Sorry. Anyway, let me kind of wrap this up. This is paragraph 35, and then we'll kind of jump down a little bit to some other good points regarding nullification, because this is where Madison starts making the point when we jump down to this, where states must secede from the Union. Anyway, this is 35. Such being the comment of the report on the third resolution, it fully demonstrates the meaning attached to it by Virginia when passing it, and rescues it from the nullifying misconstruction into which the resolution has been distorted. And so, jumping down to 41, this is what Madison now says. And actually, we don't have time. I look over my shoulder. I've got seconds left. We will pick this up with paragraph 41. So those of you who want to read ahead, you're going to love this, because this is where he starts talking about how, you know, if the states do go down this path of nullifying, they need to secede. And in other words, they need to no longer have any say. They're no longer a party. They can't help us. They actually have to fend for themselves. And there is power, strength in numbers. This is why we created this union. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Moby Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Moby Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.